thought crime.
What is this mysterious force that cannot be contained by the control of the press? What is this force that cannot be suppressed by the banksters and the relentless operations of the captive governments and courts? What is this force that is unveiling, uncovering, and revealing? What is being plotted behind those doors? What are they talking about in the rooms of power, where deep inside they must surely be a tremble? The hot breath of fire at the nape of the neck is a chilling terror for those who imagine that they can hide behind their guarded doors, behind their money and the appearance of power, behind their armies and their courts, behind the lies that are the walls they dreamed would protect them, and which now become the walls of the prison that confines them. The endless parade of their terrible deeds parades before them. It grows stronger and more relentless with each passing day, and they cannot turn away. They cannot run. They cannot hide. In every direction they approach the images and the sounds. They hear the outcry of their victims. They hear the footsteps of approaching justice. They hear their names being called. There is no lawyer who can plead their case. There is no defense. Only the prosecutor will speak as they sit in the docks and hear the litany of their crimes. You can call it the fulfillment of prophecy, and you can call it the natural outcome of natural law. You can believe that there is a destiny that shapes our ends, and you can believe it is purely a mechanical device. You can call it random or planned, intentional or accidental. It is here, nonetheless. It is here. Imagine their horror as they wonder at the cause of this. Imagine their fear as they muster their impotence against the forces of their own destruction that they set in motion. Relentless and unstoppable, it continues to their door with every passing second of the day. You cannot imprison the truth. It will, in time, burst every bond. The collective outrage of those that were slandered and tormented screams in the whirlwind as it gathers its force. The murdered and imprisoned join in the chorus. Gaza and all the lands where this horror has marched with its hobnailed boot are joined in a universal cry. They cannot stop their ears, they cannot close their eyes, and they cannot hide their faces. Each day brings their crimes before the attention of the world. What awaits us all in these coming days? This I do not know. All I know is that the truth is unveiling, uncovering, revealing, and there is nothing anyone can do to stop it. No misdirection, no added millions in new unmarked graves. No rediscovered Nazis. No new lies accomplish anything more than to amplify the presence of the lies already told. Welcome to the apocalypse and the unveiling of the truth. Moral compromise in the end justifying the means by whatever means. It was a time of the worship of the transitory and the elevation of drunken ignorance over the thirst for truth. Truth was a refugee in flight on a violent night.
It was a time of deception and reaction towards the solution of freedom as an intolerable state and a non-commercially viable condition. It was a time of precessions and regressions and a confusion of the moment on the doorstep of irrevocable change. It was a hard time to live in unless you were one of the few who had made existence hard for everyone else. It was a time of images and symbols that were wielded as weapons upon the superficial minds so inclined and submissive in a pornographic sexual exchange that mocked the true surrender of the deeper self to the higher awareness and all things human. It was a time of debasement for the virtues and the celebration of vice, because it was a time of political correctness, masking the hatred for all that was good and real. We were the people that might have been. You should have gotten in touch with us then. We were the unseeing and relentless persecution of those envisioned who were labeled a threat to the disorder of order. We were pawns engaged in our own destruction, proud and stupid and false. We cheered in the Colosseums and informed on our fellows. We raised perversion to be normal and locked normal in a barn. We laughed with merciless humor at persecutions that came by our own consent, and everything was true and meaningful within us. Got up and went. We were the hellbound in denial of the heaven sent. We embraced the animal as the civilized way, cannibalizing our loved ones and killing ourselves like a collection of poor unfortunates who gnawed off their own foot. We hailed what was trivial as a worshipful profound, and we went all too quickly into the cold and forgotten ground. We made heroes out of rogues and pariahs out of our most important friends. We were the generation of vipers, ever and ever after. Amen. You will not see what I could show you. You will not hear what I could tell you. You will not be stopped or moved. You will see perdition as the holy gates and hear the lies of your corrupted guides as they take you through corridors of the condemned up the 13 steps. We would have served and healed you, but we were cast out from our quarters as your neighbors and friends. Into this time of darkness came a signal event. They call it 911, and they made it into a royal seal, like a lock on a letter for the eyes of the few who composed the lies it contained and who carried out the crime. You could not see the contents, but you had their guarantee that all was well and legal. Keeping moving, there is nothing here to see. You vain, fatuous mortals, you shall reap the indifferent wind that was aroused by your indifference, and nothing will be the same again. You dance and pray and celebrate the horror and the lies. You pinch your face and become solemn, though you must be uneasy beneath. And your keepers snicker and make jokes at your expense. with their hands, for they are your master and determiner of fate. You can't get there from here. You can't get there from here. You can't get there from here. We few who wait by highway, we hold up the signs, the bridge is out, and the road is slippery when wet with the blood of those who have driven over through proxy and malicious ascent. You cannot hear, and you will not see, so you will be forced from both perspectives, and you will be brought to your knees. A pestilence moves among you, motivated by hunger and greed. They are the habitation of demons. They are the demon seed, and you are honored and privileged to serve on their behalf, which is the end of all of you. It is no wonder that they laugh. They will not change. They cannot change. They are the expression of what cannot be pacified or convinced. They are open to no argument that might affect profit or excess. They are the poisonous few in your midst. They pretend they are you. And you are content. A monster walks among us with a clipboard and instruments of torment and oppression. This monster has been walking for a long, long time, planning for a long time. This monster works for the concentrated evil of the departing age. This monster wants war, mass murder, gulags and concentration camps. This monster wants unending screams, uninterrupted by rights and protections. This monster has all of its rights of performance and practice guaranteed by laws brought into being by other monsters employed or compromised by it, and who came into positions of power because too many people were dreaming about their own confinements that came disguised as liberty and freedom to acquire and possess what they did not have and believed they needed, and that their lives would not be complete without. Even as they pursued these things, they lost everything of real value, which they possessed along the way, until they had neither. We know who this monster is. This monster screams for blood in the headlines of the world, in the media controlled by this monster. This monster wants to attack and destroy nations and peoples who have not made war on others in centuries, and those who did it with the assistance and at the urging of this monster. Agents of this monster are traveling from country to country at this very moment, breathing down the necks of other monsters until they have achieved what they seek. They want to open the gates of hell, just to see what happens and to enjoy the show. There will be no peace, no symmetry, and no prosperity while this monster and his crew are allowed to move among us. We have always been at war with the same enemy, and this enemy's chief weapons are our ignorance and our appetites. We are seduced, but we go willing enough. Survive its fools, and even the ambitious, but it cannot survive treason from within. An enemy at the gates is less formidable
people he has known and carries his banner openly. But the traitor moves amongst those within the gate freely. His sly whispers rustling through all the alleys, heard in the very halls of government itself. For the traitor appears not a traitor. He speaks in accents familiar to his victims, and he wears their face and their arguments. He appeals to the baseness that lies deep in the hearts of all men. He rots the soul of a nation. He works secretly. Undermine the pillars of the city. He infects the body politic so that it can no longer resist. A murderer is less to fear. The same people who brought you the thing you wanted removed the thing you needed in the process. Life doesn't make sense most of the time. And there are deeper and ever deeper beneaths and behinds as you continue to go on in your inquiry. Should you choose to continue. And we do continue, but mostly we continue to continue. The result is that it gets more tightly pressed and darker. And more confining. It also gets hotter and more constricted. I suppose you might get short of breath in that direction. Probably accounts for the erection. If you were going the other way, you could call it inspiration, and it moves into less confined locations.
Do you hear voice calls?
Word is cooler, wider, higher, and freer. It's not rocket science and only a little more difficult than a performing blowjob. Unless you find that really difficult.
Do you hear voices often?
In which case you are better served according to your interests by finding your nails.
Christians were brutally slaughtered during World War I. But no one cares. Millions of people were brutally slaughtered during World War II. But no one cares. And only after this bloodshed and horror were the Nag Hammadi codices, the treatise on the resurrection, and the Dead Sea Scrolls, the Thanksgiving hymns and the Scroll of the War of the Sons of Light discovered, revealing that the doctrine of resurrection was taught by Isaiah, Daniel, Jesus and Muhammad as a doctrine of rebirth, and that the satanic Egyptian Pharisaical doctrine of the physical raising of a dead body from the grave is at the very foundation of a demonic and intrinsically bloodthirsty Jewish, Christian and Muslim theology, which, for that reason, is responsible for that previous bloodshed. But no one cares. Least of all the media officials and the religious authorities. How did the dragon media officials and the beast of the earth, false prophet Jewish, Christian and Muslim religious authorities respond to the truth? By censorship and by even more frantic, greedy and power-hungry propagation of their demonic theologies. And meanwhile, over the ensuing 60 years, millions of Muslims were then slaughtered across the Middle East. But no one cares. So, now at least hundreds of thousands of Jews and millions of Christians and Muslims, having witlessly and unquestioningly swallowed hook, line and sinker the satanic, bloodthirsty Egyptian theological doctrines and lies of their respective religious authorities, live in anticipation, or so they say, of the arrival of the Messiah, or Jesus, or the Mahdi, who, apparently, will be required to save them, for some unknown reason, from the time of trouble, prophesied in Daniel 12:1. Almost as if this civilization actually deserves to survive. But does it? Where is the evidence? The Jewish, Christian and Muslim religious authorities have, out of greed and the lust for power, turned upside down the revelations received by their respective prophets. In particular, the truth about the doctrine of resurrection, the consequence of which is genocide. But no one cares. And even after having been informed of the truth about the doctrine of resurrection, they have not repented of those lies, but have slaughtered millions of Muslims, bringing this civilization to the very brink of a time of trouble, during which all indications are that millions of Jews, millions of Christians, millions of Muslims, millions of Hindus, millions of Buddhists, and millions of others will be slaughtered. But no one cares. So why, exactly, should a civilization survive at all in which no one cares about the truth? In which no one cares about human life at all?
awoke slowly, consumed with inexplicable apprehension. My head seemed detached, distant, and I swam through the mind's darkness, seeking the glow of consciousness. I became aware that it was dark. I couldn't see anything. As the sleep cloud faded, I realized something of even greater concern. I couldn't hear. I was deaf. This scared me more than anything. Darkness was a state I was accustomed to. It's dark all the time. I close my eyes. It's dark. But silence. Total, absolute, unyielding, terrified me. I felt isolated, cut off from the world just beyond the darkness, more alone than I'd ever felt. Someone could be standing but a few feet from me, talking to me, telling me what had happened, warning me. But in the silent darkness, I would not know. I was alone. Remember. Try to remember. What was I doing before the darkness? Before the silence? Where was I? Where am I? I moved my right arm. Slow. Heavy-handed. Then it hit. Wake up. Pain. Horrible. Searing. Throbbing. First my arm, then my shoulder, back, chest, my head. My head felt like it had been kicked in the face by a horse wearing cleats. I instinctively reached up and then realized I was pinned. I couldn't raise my arm to my head. The pain, pulsating now, like a grinding toothache, but the tooth is my head. Then the drill. That's what it sounded like, a dental drill right through the top of my head. I shout out, but nothing. I can make no sound. I am racked with escalating and all but unbearable agony. I cannot see. I cannot hear. I do not know where I am. I don't know who I am. A new level of terror. Pain. Horrible, pounding, searing, grinding pain, and I don't even know who is feeling it. I am so afraid. Then I smell it. Smoke. Whoever I am, wherever I am, I smell smoke. Think. Think. What kind of smoke? There are different kinds. What do I smell? Wood. Wood is burning. Then, with the already excruciating pain, everywhere I feel it. Heat. Wood is burning near me, whoever I am. I thought I was afraid before. Is the next awakening coming with the smell of me cooking? I sense stuff on top of me, heavy, difficult to move. The heat increases. The smell now includes artificial scents. Plastic, polyester, rubber, flesh. I smell burning flesh. I focus my concentration and try to move. I'm on my back. I force myself up. Feel wood and debris fall off of me. Smell gypsum dust through the smoke. I sneeze. This shakes me awake and I begin coughing. At first I hear nothing, but as I cough, nearly choking on the dust and smoke, I can hear my body hacking, each cough agonizing, my chest feeling as though it will cave in. Arms like they were beaten with baseball bats, head pounding, swimming. My eyes open, the room is dark. But I can make it out through my clouded eyes. I see the sky through a hole in the ceiling. The walls around the hole cratered and burning. Lots of smoke. I focus hard, my head splitting, body straining as I lean forward, rubble from the ruined structure around me falling off. I can barely make it out, but once I realize what it is, I find myself. A framed photograph of my family on holiday, on the night table. I'm in my bedroom. I'm on my bed. The wrecked ruin around me, upon me, is my house. I look to the right. Beside me on the bed lies my wife, very still. As I sit upright, more rubble falling from my brutalized body, my ears split with a horrible buzzing, grinding sound. My head swims, and I begin to topple back onto the bed. Catching myself, I know who I am. I know where I am. I observe with silent horror the ruin of my home around me. My wife is dead. As I move closer to her, I see her face has been ripped from her head by a ceiling rafter, her neck broken, body torn by burning shards of something, the bed soaked in blood. I begin to cry and see in the broken mirror near me that I am bleeding and appear to have lost half of my face, mangled right ear and skin dangling from my shredded head. The pain overwhelms me as I look into the room next to ours, the children's room. It is a flaming ruin. Walls and ceilings collapsed. Rafters and roofing crushing our two daughters, pinning them until the flames can finish them off. By now this has occurred and I stare into the burning hell that engulfs my family. And I try to make sense of it. Then I remember certain governments fly unmanned aircraft over residential areas and bomb houses where people they suspect of opposing them might be. Apparently they were in the neighborhood and decided to drop by. While I really didn't care one way or the other about them before, I think you can say I number myself among their growing opposition now. And with no family to care for, or any chance of ever knowing a woman again with my face destroyed, I'll have plenty of time to express it.
Thought crime.
Just a word. Terrorist is just a word. One I wish I'd never heard. When it's used to vilify, without the need to question why, only fools would swift condemn that which has not befallen them. Until you know what lies behind the actions of a tortured mind. Thank your God for sparing you the suffering others have lived through. Where are the cries of just demand for Arabs driven from their land? Blame the victim, turn the cheek, praise the bully, kick the weak. Mock the man who truth does speak. Tinker, tailor, soldier, spy, greed, corruption, torture, lies, lair invasion, sly persuasion, annihilation, massacre nation. Keep on running. Karma's coming. Money talks, truth walks, oil spills, greed kills, tide is turning. London's burning. arms will fall and blood will flow. As sure as my own name, I know. Until corrupt dictators go, brutal, rotten to the core, their day has come. They rule no more. Show me the man who will not fight to save his child, his home, his right. You can call him what you like. You're not in his sorry plight. Cowards stay and martyrs go. I know not where, but this I know. Speak your truth and stand your ground. Fight your corner when all around point the finger, purse the lips, pin the label, terrorist. Just a word, but one that sticks, even when the cap don't fit. But for the grace of God go I, remember that before you cry. False accusation, names of shame at those who may not be to blame. Their crime, refuse to play the game of meek acceptance, dumbing down. Your life, your choice. Warrior, clown. No guts, no glory. Pursuers of any great goal can tell you that. In the human psyche, from the moment a newborn baby emerges into the light of day, he or she has a desire for magic. We are told this is an early fetish that fades away as the experience of the world sets in, as maturity evolves, as practical reality is better understood. In most areas of psychology, sensible adjustment to practical reality is a great prize to be won by the patient. It marks the passage from child to adult. It is hailed as a therapeutic triumph. In truth, the desire for magic never goes away, and the longer it is buried, the greater the price a person pays. A vaccine against a disease can mask the visible signs of that disease, but under the surface, the immune system may be carrying on a low-level chronic war against toxic elements of the vaccine, and the effects of the war can manifest in odd forms. So it is with the inoculation of reality aimed at suppressing magic. One of the byproducts of the reality shot is depression. The person feels cut off from the very feeling and urge he once considered a hallmark of life. Therefore, chronic sadness. And of course one can explain that sadness in a variety of ways, none of which gets to the heart of the matter. It is assumed that so-called primitive cultures played magic front and center because they couldn't do better. They couldn't formulate a true and rational religion with a church and monks and collection plate and a European choir and an array of pedophiles. They couldn't fathom what real science was. Their impulse for magic had to be defamed and reduced and discredited. Why? Obviously, because the Westerners who were poking through ancient cultures like demented professors had already discredited magic in themselves. They had put it on a dusty shelf in a room in a cellar beyond the reach of their own memory. But they couldn't leave it alone. They had to keep worrying it, scratching it, and so they journeyed thousands of miles to find it somewhere else. And then they scoffed at it and tried to crush it. And we wonder why, under the banner of organized religion, there has been so much killing. At a deep level, the adherents know they've sold their souls, and they're depressed, angry, resentful, remorseful, and they want to assuage and expiate their guilt through violence. But the urge for magic is forever. And yet the charade goes on. While playing homage and lip service to ordinary practical reality, seasoned with a bit of fairy tale organized religion, people actually want to change reality. They want to reveal their latent paranormal power. They want to get outside reality. They want to create realities that, by conventional standards, are deemed impossible. And they want to find and use their own magic. In our modern culture, we're taught that everything is learned as a system. That, you could say, is the underlying assumption of education. It has far-reaching consequences. It leads to the systemizing of the mind. The mind is shaped to accommodate this premise. If I want to know something, I have to learn it. Somebody has to teach it to me. They will teach it as a system. I will learn the system. I will elevate the very notion of systems. Everything will be a system. In the long run, that's a heavy loser. That'll get you a lump of coal in a sock, a spiritual cardboard box to live in. As I reconstruct the legend of Merlin, one of my favorite guys, I put him in my sights as the one who taught himself magic by abandoning all systems. That was his genius. Don't misunderstand. He didn't turn himself into a blithering idiot. He just stepped outside systems. He went down roads based on his own naked desire to make magic. To modern man, this makes no sense. The intellectual enrolls at Harvard. He studies anthropology for 6 years. He flies to a jungle in South America. He digs up remnants of a lost culture. He infers they performed arcane ceremonies 6 times a week. He writes monographs, and he concludes they were a very picturesque society with fascinating customs and totems, and their brand of magic can best be understood as an inevitable consequence of their matriarchal organization, which itself was an accommodation to rainfall levels. The anthropologist takes 2 Paxil and goes off to teach a class on the meaning of ancient eyebrow trimming in Tierra del Fuego. The rocket of real magic is still on the launching pad. It's waiting. Systems are wonderful things. They produce results. They take us into technological triumphs. They help us become more rational. But when they are overdone, when the mind itself becomes shaped like a system, it reaches a dead end. Then the mind works against the unquenchable desire for magic. Then society is organized as a tighter and tighter system. It turns into a madhouse. And then people say, maybe machines can actually think and choose and decide. Maybe machines are alive. What would happen if we grafted computers onto our brains? It might be wonderful. People move in the direction after their own minds have been shaped, like putty, into systems. They don't see much difference between themselves and machines. When you have a world run by 1 million machine systems, you encounter horrific problems. One of those problems stems from the fact that each system gets things a little bit wrong. Each system is skewed to one side just a little bit. And when you add up all these wrong little bits, you get a real threat to basic survival. The whole ship of civilization is tilting dangerously in the water. Far worse than that, the deep desire for magic in every individual is squashed. That's the real problem. So the first order of business is the restoration of imagination, from which all magic flows. Imagination is sitting right there, always ready to go, waiting. Imagination is saying, the mind has been shaped into a system. I can undo that. I can literate the mind and make it into an adventurous vessel. I can provide untold amounts of new energy. Life is waiting for imagination to revolutionize it down to its core. Since imagination is a wild card that technocrats can't absorb in their systems, they pretend it a faculty produced by the actions of atoms in the brain. They pretend it is a delusion that can be explained by demonstrating, for example, that a machine can turn out paintings or poems. You see, we don't need humans to make art. Computers can do just as well. Imagination isn't mysterious at all. Technocracy and transhumanism flow from the concept that the human being is just another machine, and any machine can be made to operate more efficiently. Of course, that operation must conform to overriding objectives that define what efficiency is geared for. Objectives like acceptance, surrender, group integration. The result? Society is organized to eliminate all outliers and rebels. And many people believe that the system called civilization will give them security, protection. Hence the willingness to go along with the surveillance state. Well, I don't commit crimes, so I'm okay. The system won't punish me. It'll guard me against all those other people. Meanwhile, imagination waits. It never vanishes. It stands by just in case an individual decides to live a life that overflows with creative power. If my work is any organized precedent, it is ancient Tibet, where 1,500 years ago, before the priests took over with their interminable spiritual baggage of ritual, practitioners engaged in exercises that engaged imagination to the hilt. The entire goal was revealing that the universe was a product of mind. This was not about ultimate worship. This was not about some deep substrate in the universe that one could plug into to guide his actions and thought. It was about liberating the individual from all systems. It was about endless creation. The first teachers of this way came from India, where they had been pushed out of the academies of orthodox religious instruction. They were rebels. They had offloaded the metaphysical labyrinths of control. They were, in a sense, artists. Artists of reality. They were brilliant riverboat gamblers and, in Tibet, for a time, they found a home. They found students who, as now, were tired of the preaching designed to make humans into sophisticated mind machines. These people wanted more. They wanted to awaken their own imaginations and exceed the illusory boundaries of space and time. They wanted magic, despite every cynical ploy. That desire is still alive.
Things have been going wrong long enough to know everything is right. Been walking in the dark long enough to know I've finally seen the light.
When someone awakens to the true nature of the manipulated world we live in, as well as the vast resources at our immediate conscious fingertips, it takes some doing to fully realize what that information means, as well as the vast implications on your personal life. It can hit hard and may need some time to be digested. How it affects each of us individually is really a question of simply putting what we've learned into action and trusting the universe for the consequences. I don't think there's time for much else. In fact, there never has been. If you know the truth, what are you waiting for? While many are hoping for some kind of soft peddling of any kind of action call, it's not a set formula. You just find out and you react. act. And just that takes some doing, breaking off the rust of your true self to animate and start to call the shots that were previously hindered by lifelong programming. True response ability.
Even a blind man can tell when he's walking in the sun. Walking in the sun. And places, but he flows in grand, undivided currents, shoreless and boundless over creeds and forms and all kinds of civilizations and peoples and beasts, saturating all and fountainizing all. We're all connected.
Thought crime.